We're very happy to have on our program tonight Deirdre Shelley. She's an organizer with the climate activist group 350.org and a lead organizer with Our Generation, Our Choice. Deirdre, so good to have you on the program tonight. Thank you for making time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I was really impressed. It was a week ago, I believe, a week ago Monday, that thousands of people, mostly young people, descended in Washington, D.C., in an organized protest demanding justice on race, climate, and immigration. And I know there was some civil disobedience committed outside the White House, blocking traffic there for up to a couple of hours. But I was really impressed and inspired by that protest because it combines some very important issues together. It was the kind of coalition politics and movement that has not been well in evidence in our country in recent years. So, Deirdre, maybe you can begin by talking about this particular multi-issue protest in Washington last Monday and how this came together.
Sure. So this, the Our Generation, Our Choice mobilization came out of a lot of conversations with students, young people, and leaders in the movement for Black Lives, the climate justice, and fossil fuel divestment, as well as folks at United We Dream who are working with immigrant youth and their families. And a lot of those people and individuals realizing that our movements are more aligned than we sometimes realize or demonstrate. And seeing that, especially in the lead up to the 2016 elections, all of us, all of our movements, and especially the young people and students in those movements, are doing amazing work and demonstrating really strong leadership, asking candidates really tough questions in the field, bird-dogging candidates, and having rallies outside of or during their different events, and saying that those young people, the people who are pressuring Hillary Clinton on the Keystone XL pipeline or disrupting Donald Trump about, you know, his comments about borders, they care about each other's issues and are informed or even working on each other's issues. And we thought it would be really useful and helpful a year before the 2016 election for all of us to have a moment and a space to come together, have some training, some intentional discussions about what our organizing looks like and what it could look like in the year ahead. And then also having an action right outside the White House, since all of us are working so much to pressure the folks who want to be in the White House in a year. We thought, what if we all came together right outside, held a big action to demonstrate the strength and unity of our different movements. So the action itself started there, and then from a few of those initial conversations sort of spiraled and got into different networks and groups and became what we saw last week.
And what was the upshot of the protest? I know, you know, folks like me was very inspired and impressed. Were a number of people arrested in the civil disobedience action and blocking traffic right there in front of the White House? You know, is there any solidarity work going on with those who may have been charged?
Yeah, so we had students trained and prepared to be arrested, but the police in D.C. are quite used to protest and decided not to arrest folks. So we got there, stopped traffic, held the space for a few hours, and then once we confirmed that, you know, arrests were not going to be made or anything like that, we marched back to the park where we had started and wrapped things up there. So no arrests happened, even though people were definitely prepared for it.
Deirdre, looking in from the outside, I find this protest unique because it does combine various important protest movements together in one action. And that hasn't been so much in evidence lately. Is that something unique in terms of your familiarity with what's going on around the country, where often groups congregate around single issues and don't come together in a coalition around a set of issues? Is that something that you were specifically and concretely trying to break that mold?
Yeah, I think absolutely working across movements was an intentional goal of the entire mobilization. And I think, you know, from folks working on, you know, shutting down deportation centers to stopping police brutality to stopping major fossil fuel sites, we all have an understanding that the only way our movements are going to truly win is if we win alongside one another. And the elections especially present a special opportunity for us to work together, because all of us are going to be affected by whoever the next president is. That person is going to have an impact on all of our issues, and the different policy changes and other changes that we're working on. So I think all our movements coming to a place where they understand the importance of one another, and then also just having an election up ahead, sort of created a really good atmosphere for the sort of cross-movement, intersectional type of mobilization.
We're speaking with Deirdre Shelley. She's an organizer with the climate activist group 350.org and a lead organizer with Our Generation, Our Choice, which conducted a multi-issue protest in front of the White House this past Monday, November 9th. And Deirdre, from your experience in organizing this protest there in front of the White House, what do you see as the future potential of building a larger multi-issue progressive movements across the country, addressing public policy issues not being addressed by Congress or the presidential candidates or the corporately funded political parties?
Yeah, so the groups, the specific organizations that came together for this action were United We Dream, the Million Hadith Movement for Justice, and the Divestment Student Network, and then 350.org. And all of those groups are committed to thinking about how we can best work together in the year ahead. So I think this action showed a lot of promise for what's possible when folks working on different issues come together. And I think it's really powerful. Every student and young person I talk to, when I just said the leaders of these different organizations and movements are coalescing around this mobilization, people were so excited in a way that they wouldn't be if I was just, you know, oh, this one group is planning something. So there is definitely a specific power and excitement and people coming together across issues. And like I said, I think elections and a lot of our organizations think elections provide a special opportunity to do that sort of work. So I'm excited to see what that work looks like in the next year.
So in regards to the presidential election here in the United States, I know that one of the demands of those protesting last Monday was a request to meet with all the presidential candidates to ask about their agenda to address the issues which you were marching about. Has there been any feedback from candidates in either party to your request?
Not yet, though. I think I know Bernie Sanders, maybe not surprisingly, did show on social media some support for the mobilization. So I think there's a little more promise there, but I don't think, or I don't know of any leads that have materialized the past week on that ask.
There are some people who take a jaundiced view at U.S. politics, given that the view is out there, certainly among many young people, that our political system is irreparably broken, at least at the present time, and that affecting change through, ordinary politics is pretty near impossible with the Citizens United Supreme Court decision and the money in politics and the outsized role it plays in policies that do or do not get adopted in Washington. What's your view of the viability of U.S. politics at this point?
Yeah, that's a hard question, and I think, you know, I'm a young person myself, and definitely have been pretty disenchanted with, at times, with the way our political system works. But in a lot of ways, that's what this mobilization was getting at. We have a lot of young people who are doing amazing work in different social movements, but aren't necessarily excited about or engaged in formal electoral work. Might lead an awesome rally or march for fossil fuel divestment or racial justice in their, like, on their campus or in their community, but don't think it's important for them to vote. And so a lot of what this action and mobilization, as well as the training that happened the day before it, was about was making that connection and showing students who are doing, like I said, really incredible work in different movements, really digging in and saying, okay, this work is inspiring and powerful, and it's so powerful that we can take it to a local Senate race or a state Senate race, or we can organize field offices for, you know, the presidency a few months down the road, and showing young people and students that sort of electoral and political engagement is a real opportunity for them to build the world that they want. And that can be a hard leap, you know, in all honesty, that can be a hard leap for people to make. But I think it's happening, and our movements are maturing and growing up and seeing that one of the best ways for them to win and build real power is for them to engage in elections, get their folks and their people into office, and executing on the policy demands that they want to see.
Right, and it's certainly equally important to voting to get involved as you have, and the people who showed up at this multi-issue protest in Washington last week, to exert pressure from the outside. Maybe you don't have the money for lobbyists and roaming the halls of Congress with campaign contributions. That's not really the strength of your group and your coalition, but exerting pressure from the outside has in the past certainly shown results. And one of those issues that it has shown results, many believe, is the recent decision by President Obama not to go forward, to reject the Keystone XL pipeline. And there are a lot of people out there who are, gratified that President Obama made that decision and attribute that victory to groups like yours, 350.org, that was in the, in the vanguard of leading protests and raising awareness about this issue, about the Keystone XL pipeline and its link with global warming. But there are other people who are cynical, of course, and they say, well, the only reason the Keystone XL pipeline was not approved by this White House was because the oil market has soured, that the price of oil has dipped so low that it wasn't even economically viable anymore to transport tar sands from Canada down to those refineries down in Texas. I'd like to get your view on that. What did we learn from the Keystone XL pipeline protests and the decision here by President Obama?
Yeah, so I think a rallying cry I've heard at many Keystone XL protests at the White House or in D.C., and that definitely rung true last Friday after the president announced that he was going to reject the pipeline, is that organized people beat organized money every time. And I think the Keystone fight is such a clear and good example of that. The Keystone pipeline was the first ever rally or action or thing I went to. It was what got me into the sort of work and organizing. The fight itself was so compelling and inspiring and powerful for so many people. And I think taught a lot of people in the movement, all walks of life, from students, seniors, ranchers, indigenous folks, that fight was made up of a broad coalition of people who coalesced around this one you know, symbol of the fossil fuel industry stranglehold on our democracy and our future. And I think that coalition, building that sort of broad-based support, was a really important lesson for us. And I think the other really important lesson was perseverance and not giving up. That fight took many years, some that, like, between 4 and 7, depending on when you jumped in, or maybe even fewer if you were newer to the movement. But the folks leading that fight knew and understood that if they were going to win, they couldn't give up, and had to hold march after march and rally after rally and press conference after press conference about why this pipeline was a catastrophe and a horrible idea for our country and for the president to make. So I think especially as we look forward into elections 2016 and broader progressive fights, the two biggest things from Keystone that personally I've learned, and also I think are some of the lessons our movement has learned at large, are about building broad-based support, a coalition, and finding and framing an idea that can speak to a lot of people, as well as the very simple lesson of never giving up. And if you don't, then not always, but sometimes you might just win.
Thank you for that, Deirdre. We're speaking tonight on Counterpoint with Deirdre Shelley, an organizer with climate activist group 350.org and a lead organizer with a coalition of groups called Our Generation, Our Choice, that conducted a multi-issue protest in front of the White House in Washington, D.C. last week. And the issues they focused on were race, climate, and immigration. And, you know, I was just thinking about another example of the struggle to curtail climate change, and that was the protests that were evidenced just this year against drilling in the Arctic. And we had kayaktivists, all those people on kayaks in the Northwest, trying to prevent the one of the tending ships, as well as the oil rig that was going up to the Arctic Ocean to drill for oil, something people in the climate justice movement were certainly firmly opposed to. President Obama gave the go-ahead, and it turned out that Shell, the Shell oil company that was undertaking this exploration up there in the Arctic Ocean, eventually decided to pull out just because it was not economically viable. But it does raise consciousness, of course, the fact that even President Obama may have certainly had second thoughts after the outpouring of opposition to that decision he made to allow the Arctic drilling to go forward. Any observations about that chapter, Deirdre, which is pretty recent?
Yeah, I think the kayaktivists and the No Shell campaign and movement had a lot of overlap, certainly, with Keystone. And it's the same sort of idea of a movement of people who, you know, aren't just environmentalists, but care about climate change and fossil fuel extraction for a whole host of reasons, coming together around a big fight that seems very difficult to win, and using creative tactics like taking kayaks to, you know, different right to the front of different fossil fuel icebreakers, and being persistent and bold and being unafraid of putting their bodies on the line and taking a lot of risk, that sometimes those movements can win. Keystone was the first thing for a lot of people that showed them those lessons and that potential. And I think the fight against Shell and a lot of other fights to come are going to rely on those very important lessons.
Well, Deirdre, just another question here. We have the important United Nations Climate Summit that will be coming at the end of this month and into December in Paris, the site of this horrible terrorist attack and carnage there. How important is this climate summit for the world at large and the future of combating climate change. And of course, this context of this horrible attack in Paris on the people of that city, it may connect the two in some ways, because climate change exacerbates social disorder, and it's been linked by even the CIA to future social and economic problems that exacerbate conflict. But what are some of your thoughts about the upcoming summit in Paris?
Yeah, I think the climate negotiations in Paris, and especially the way that the global climate movement relates to them, definitely has to take into account the attacks that happened a few days ago. And I was just reading on Facebook and Twitter today, I've seen a lot of people say the climate movement and climate justice is ultimately a movement for peace, peace for people to live in their homes and communities without fear of rising sea levels or extreme weather or extreme fossil fuel extraction, and that the sort of violence that we saw in Paris a few days ago will only strengthen our fight and call for climate justice and action on climate at the COP negotiations in a few weeks. And I think as for the negotiations themselves, you know, our movement has seen those negotiations fail. And we've seen world leaders not rise to the challenge, not make policies that reflect the science we're seeing about how urgent the need is to stop fossil fuel extraction, stop burning carbon, and build a renewable energy economy in future. So I think people have higher hopes for Paris. There's certainly a lot of really good organizing happening to get the strongest commitments we can from world leaders. But at the end of the day, this movement is going to be determined by us and the campaigns we're running on the ground to stop fracking and shut down tar sands and build community-owned solar projects in our own communities. And Paris is certainly an important moment and can't be neglected in all of that organizing. But, you know, all of the organizers I'm talking to and know understand that regardless of what happens in Paris 2 weeks from now, they're going to have to keep fighting to shut down the fracking in their backyard, shut down the coal plant, you know, the county next to them, stop coal exports in their city, stop oil trains that are driving through their town. And we know ultimately that this fight is up to us.
Well, Deirdre, thank you so much. And just lastly, before we say goodnight, what are the plans of this multi-issue coalition, the Our Generation, Our Choice group? Are you planning future actions and continuing to maintain activism in advance of this election coming up in a year from now, November 2016?
Yeah, all of our groups absolutely have their own plans and campaigns that we're continuing to work on. And we also have some pretty solid ideas of how we want to work together in the next year, but we were all pretty exhausted after last week and have taken a bit of a break. So aren't sure and haven't nailed down exactly how we want to move forward together, but I think it'll be exciting.
It will be, and I hope you'll make sure to put me on your mailing list so I can share that with our listeners and have you back to talk about your future plans. I am very excited about that, the potential of this multi-issue coalition you've helped put together, Deirdre. So it's been great talking with you, and thanks so much. No, do you want to leave a website for the Our Generation, Our Choice, as well as 350.org for our listeners?
Yeah, I think if you want to see the wrap-up video of the action, which gives a good idea of what it felt like to be there, you can go to ourgenerationourchoice.org. And that'll have links to other sites and, like I said, a really powerful video about what the action itself felt like.
Okay. And the group you work with also is 350.org, which that's the website right there, 350.org. All right.
Easy.
Take care, Deidre. Great talking with you. Thanks so much for making time for us. Take care.
Yep. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye. That's Deidre Shelley, an organizer with Climate Justice Group 350.org and a lead organizer with the coalition we've been talking about tonight, Our Generation, Our Choice.